We all know that feeling. You open your closet. It's full, but you have literally nothing to wear. Story of my life, you guys. Enter Armoire. Armoire allows you to rent high-quality designer clothing for every occasion. Whether you're planning your outfit for a date, or packing for a conference for work, or you need a gown for a black tie event, you will always be the best dressed person in the room without ever having to brave a fitting room with fluorescent lights. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic personalized closet, and then the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. And then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out for more new to you styles. But here's the deal. Armoire is also women-founded and women-led. They even spotlight women-owned designers on their website. So I know that I'm wearing brands that are aligned with my values. And if you're listening to my podcast, probably yours. I love that I can support a business that's built by women like me. And if you're ready to have your dream closet delivered to your door, you've got to try Armoire. I promise you will never be without the perfect outfit for any occasion ever again. How about that? So right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/DSG. So that's Armoire, Armoire, .style/DSG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Welcome to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, where we have open and honest conversations about co-parenting, separation, divorce, and the hardest question of all, should you stay or should you go? I'm Kate Anthony, your Divorce Survival Guide, and I'm here to help you navigate some of the roughest waters you've ever swum in and answer some of your toughest questions. I've been to hell and back, and now it's my mission in life to help you get to the other side of this process with your sanity and your heart intact.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. So before we get into today's episode, which is just like a warm bath, I wanted to let you know that the Divorce Survival Program is now open for enrollment for everyone. And this program is, you know, I think as I've said to you a number of times, it is a labor of love that I've been working on for years. I can't tell you how grateful I am to my friends and colleagues and guest experts who have joined me, Susan Guthrie, Christina McGee, Sean Lehman, Rhonda Nordyke, Dr. Elizabeth Cohen. I could go on and on and on. All, you know, there's so many amazing guest experts. And but it's not just the guest experts, it's also me. So it has 23 videos of just me giving you the information, your most frequently asked questions answered. As I've said, the culmination of years of my work put into one place, and it is one-stop shopping for getting all of your questions answered about how to navigate this divorce process, from legal to financial to emotional healing, and most importantly, making decisions that will keep your children at the center of all of your decisions and never put them in the middle. And you know that is my goal always. The program is open for enrollment right now. If you go to divorcesurvivalprogram.com or click the link in the show notes or go to my website and click on Getting Divorced. All sorts of ways that you can find this. You can buy it now. It is open for enrollment. It is $497. It is unbelievably low priced. And there's a payment plan as well. So it will save you tons of money in the process. Let me tell you, it is worth so much more than the $500 that I'm charging for it. But I'm doing that because I think it's that important for you to have this information. So now on to today's episode. Today I have with me Michelle Kenny. She is, I love her bio. She's a divorced mom of two daughters, 12 and 15. She's a recovering yeller, control freak, and perfectionist turned connective parenting coach. Like I said, this conversation with Michelle is like a warm bath. When you're talking to somebody who basically does empathy for a living, it just kind of, man, it just grounds you. It brings you down, puts things in perspective. I am so grateful that we got to have this conversation. And, you know, it's also important to me to have parenting conversations with people who are actually also divorced, so who've experienced this, right? And so I'm really excited to bring you my conversation today with Michelle Kenny. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on and talking about peaceful parenting.
Yeah, it's so easy. It's an easy job.
Oh my goodness, it's so easy. But like just even saying it is just like, oh, maybe I'm saying that because I have a 16-year-old.
Oh, me too. I'm right there with you, 15 and a half. Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot. And then add like divorce and changes in, you know, family structures and, you know, the additional emotional upheaval that's not just, you know, having a teenager or having kids, right? Like at any stage.
Right. And you have your own upheaval and then you have to deal with their upheaval. And how do you regulate your own upheaval to be there for their upheaval? And
yeah,
it becomes very hard.
How do you do that?
Yeah. You run away. You exit stage left.
You go to Mexico. Bye.
See y'all.
Right. That's exactly right. So yeah, my ex's wife and I actually joke about that all the time. We're like, can we go to Mexico now? Can we just run away? Can we just leave?
Parenting's too hard. It really is. Divorce or not, parenting's just a lot. It's a big job. It's a big ask.
It is. And it's so okay. I feel like that's like a can of worms right there. Like it's a big ask. Is it now? Like was it always a big ask?
Well, I think it's always been a big ask, and it's definitely a big ask now if you're trying to do it quote unquote right. If you're trying to do it with some sort of, you know, consciousness, with some sort of dignity, which with some sort of thought of what the children are feeling or thinking, as opposed to my parents who got divorced and were just like, you guys are going to be we're just going to drag you right through everything.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
So yeah, I think now it is different. You know, we're expected to, you know, be thoughtful.
So what is peaceful parenting? Let's just start.
Yeah. So peaceful parenting is conscious parenting, connective parenting. I'm trained in connective parenting through hand in hand parenting. And it's all the idea that we really focus on the relationship with the children. And that's what gives us the peace in our home. And we focus on our behavior as opposed to focusing on their behavior. And when we focus on our behavior, we get movement with their behavior because it comes all top down. And so how do we interact with our kids using connection as opposed to using punitivity, as opposed to using reprimands and threats and yelling and all those things that we don't really want to do, but we sometimes don't know what else to do.
Right. Sure. Sure. And that's really hard when you are in, right? Sort of, well, I guess when you're in your own emotional upheaval, like as we said, right?
it feels like an ideal that we would love to achieve, right? Like it would be really simple if we could just like, you know, go to the ashram every weekend and reset and like come back all completely zen and all right. But we don't live in that world. Most of us don't have that privilege. And then there's the emotional upheaval of getting divorced, our own, right? So how do we do that when it's our own lives are so destabilized?
First of all, we do our best. Mm. We expect there's going to be mistake and we expect the humanness of it. And that when we do make mistakes, we apologize and that it's okay to make mistakes and that we're not going to be chastised if we yell because we're at our wit's end, that we make amends and we move through that. And we expect our kids to forgive us just how we are going to forgive our kids when they make mistakes. And it's okay. It's not perfect, but we just strive to do better. That's it. But we don't chastise ourselves.
Yeah. Just as we don't, like, if we're seeking to not be punitive with our children, we can't be punitive with ourselves.
That's right. And then hopefully they're not going to be punitive with us, you know, so it's all, everyone's giving forgiveness and that's all right. And we just try to do our very, very best.
And I love the idea that we are of making amends to our children, right? That's something that I think most of us who are adults today never experienced a parent coming and saying, I got that wrong and I'm sorry.
Right? Because that would be shameful if you did something wrong like that. You'd have to endure shame.
Or we're parents. So because there's a power dynamic, it doesn't matter. Your feelings in the matter don't matter.
And that goes back to the whole idea is like, yeah, we're doing it differently now. We have an obligation to apologize. And that feels different than what we experienced as kids. And that's hard. It's hard to be that humble.
It is. It is. And it can be scary because it's like being vulnerable with your kid, letting your kid know that you made a mistake when you're kind of the one supposed to be the one who knows what's happening.
Yeah. I think that's it too. Like admitting like, I'm figuring this out. I'm figuring this divorce thing out. I'm figuring this parenting thing out. I'm trying to figure it out. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it right all the time.
When you say sort of parenting from connectivity, like what does that mean?
The real essence of it is that when a kid isn't doing well, they're in their limbic system, their emotional core of their brain. And so they're not in their reasoning part of their brain, their prefrontal cortex. So they're kind of, you know, they're emotionally unstable when they're having a hard time, when they're lashing out, when they're being mean, saying unkind things, being unkind to their brother or sister, whatever it is, they're not doing well. And conventional parenting says in those moments, you should punish, you should send a timeout, you should reprimand, you should correct, you should do all these things to get your child to stop with the behavior you don't like. What connective parenting says is that, how can I get my kid's prefrontal cortex, the reasoning, thinking brain, back online? And how I do that with connection. I do that with kindness. I do that with love. So let's say a little kid is acting out and being unkind. Can you, instead of saying you need to go to timeout, can you say, looks like you're having a hard time. Do you need a hug? That's connection. And so replacing punishment and all those punitive measures with connective acts.
You guys, warmer, sunnier days are calling and you're going to want to fuel up for them with Factors, no prep, no mess meals. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and they're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you're always going to have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And I know that's really important to you guys right now. You're going through a hard time. You're in emotional upheaval, maybe some chaos, really good, healthy, nutritious meals in 2 minutes. And I'm telling you, they're so good. You've got 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. And you'll always have new flavors to explore. Treat yourself to restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon. Ugh, so good, you guys. So head to factormeals.com/DSG50 and use code DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. So the code is DSG50 at factormeals.com/DSG50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Hey, are any of you guys going through menopause or perimenopause? Ugh, you know how you can't find any comfort in your body? Or even if you're done, if you're on the other side like I am, but you still kind of feel like a wet sock on a busy highway? You've got to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. So here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body, wait for it, adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormone changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. So it's not just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of any hormonal imbalance can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopausal and perimenopausal symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas. Yeah, Hormone Harmony can help with all of those things. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over and over again in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DSG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DSG for 15% off today.
And what if they're like, no?
Yeah. And they might say, no, I don't want a hug. And you say, oh, I understand. I'm right here. It seems like you're having a hard time. Now you come with empathy. Can I have empathy for this child who's having a hard time? Can I be with them while they're having a hard time as opposed to contributing to their hard time?
Yeah. A lot of my listeners are co-parenting with people who are emotionally abusive, who are punitive. Like that is their MO. Full disclosure, so am I. And so how do you, first of all, is it safe to divorce and to, you know, have two homes or whatever, right? And leave a child in a punitive situation? Like, is it confusing? I think a lot of people are wondering if it's confusing.
And I think we have that dynamic even in married homes, right? We have one parent that might be more connective and one that might be more punitive. And definitely in all parenting, co-parenting, you know, scenarios, married or divorced or separated or whatever, you often have people who are parenting in different ways. So I don't know if divorce necessarily is the only place where that exists.
Totally.
But it most certainly probably exists more often in divorce because you do have two different houses that are doing two totally different things. But I, and psychologists will say this, you need one good connected, you know, caretaker to be a functioning human being, to do well, to be well adjusted. And I would say, what's your choice? You're going to say, oh, my co-parent over there is doing punitive measures, so I'm going to do it too, because just because they are, and I don't want to do this connective stuff because they're doing punitive stuff. Well, that doesn't seem like a really good reason to stick into the punitivity. I would say, like, I would do my best to keep my side of the street as clean as possible with my child and my relationship with my kid.
Yeah. I think most people wouldn't, I think that my listeners certainly wouldn't be like, oh no, I should be punitive because he's punitive, but they might say I should stay because then I can sort of shield or mitigate or whatever.
I don't know that that shielding though is creating an additional conflict, an additional rift that we don't necessarily want our kids to be privy to. You know, that, you know, now they're seeing the punitive nature of their parent, and they're seeing this major conflict between the parents, which they might hold themselves accountable for, because now they're feeling like, oh, my parents are having this additional conflict because of something I've done. And my mom or dad is having to come to my aid.
Right.
And so is that creating more conflict? Whereas if you just separated, would it be easier to have at least a calm place for your kids? some of the time,
right,
and letting go of that punitive stuff because it would probably exist anyway.
Because right. even having a one, you know, I always say like having one soft place to land, even just one, even if it's only 50% of the time.
Yes.
Right.
And are you creating then no soft places, right? Because is this place that you think you're, you know, you're trying to mitigate this conflict, are you creating a place that also isn't soft?
That's right. How do you talk to kids about this, you know, work or like older kids, right? I mean, I think that there's different, we've got, you know, young kids, there's ways to talk to young kids about things. And then there's like us with our teenagers.
I mean, about the divorce, you mean in general?
Yeah, sure. And maybe differences in parenting, or maybe, you know, they start to notice things.
Yeah. I try to be as honest, especially with the older kids, as honest as I can without, you know, throwing either my spouse or my ex-spouse under the bus, you know, not really just saying this is the way mommy likes to do it. And this feels good for me. And if they ask questions, being as honest as I can without, you know, throwing shade to my parenting partner. I don't want to, you know, because that will also come back to you too. Right. They notice that. And so can you be honest without being too honest? You know, can you say we're doing it this way because it feels good?
Yeah. What are some of the issues that you see in the divorce space?
Yeah. I mean, often I've worked in divorce in so many different ways. I've been hired by attorneys. I've been hired by the courts. I've been hired by the actual parents. And the biggest thing I see is that the conflict ends up permeating into the relationship that the parents have with the kids. Mm-hmm. And that's what I find the most unfortunate part of divorce. And I'm divorced too. And so I get it. And I often want to be like, well, I don't know, ask your dad, you know, like, sorry, why we got divorced. Why don't you ask your dad? You know, like,
right,
of course. And we all have that because we're, you know, it's a hard situation to be in. But I think when we can try to leave, you know, the conflict away from the kids as much as possible, when we can try to just say, you know, we're sorry we put you in this situation. We didn't want to get divorced. And we're so sorry you have to go back and forth to each house. We're sorry it's hard. And we're sorry the holidays are difficult. And I'm going to listen to your feelings, and I'm going to be here with empathy, and I'm going to be here with understanding. I'm going to try to keep the conflict away from you and just be your sounding board.
I remember when my son was little, he's like, I used to say he's like Alex P. Keaton, and he did go through period where he was like super smart, right? And super like,
yeah,
doesn't he negotiate? He's a master negotiator and has been since he was two. Like since he was verbal, he's been negotiating. I remember when I was younger doing a lot of, you know, nonviolent communication and empathy and like, yes, I know it's hard. And his response was always, then do it different.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, I know you don't want to X. I know you don't want to put your shoes on and leave the party. Then we're not going to. I know it's really hard and blah, blah, blah. Then don't do it.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
Like he would take empathy as like, right. You know, it's hard. So what the fuck?
Yeah. My older one does that.
So,
and it's that they don't want to feel the pain. They don't want to feel the upset. They're scared of it.
Mm.
It's too much for them. It's dysregulating. And the empathy almost pushes them deeper into their feeling. And it's actually a great thing. I say, you try to almost push your kid into having a tantrum because tantrums help them offload the feelings that are stuck inside their psyche. Mm. And that if you can just push with even more empathy, it will push them into a tantrum, which is a good thing.
Okay. That's really interesting. That's like really interesting.
Yeah. That's our whole method. The whole connected parenting method is based on that idea that children should tantrum.
I wish my 16-year-old would tantrum.
I know. That's interesting. It becomes very difficult to get them to have their feelings when they're older. And it's all about when they're older, the complaining. I hate school. I don't want to do this. I hate the Great Gatsby. I mean, I got it all morning this morning. It was like, oh, my phone isn't charged. And it's like, if I could just push her. So I'm like, I'm so sorry. It must be really hard. Yeah, it's hard. You don't understand. Just like your son. And if I get enough time with her, she will go super into her feelings.
Interesting. And do you find the same, like, because boys are like, I feel like girls, like, I don't know, I make up, like teenage girls are just you know, a little more emo than teenage boys.
Yeah.
And I have a pretty emo boy, but he's not going to tip.
They don't tip easily, the girls either. They really don't. And I think also society has said, you know, girls are more, it's more socially acceptable to have your feelings if you're a girl than if you're a boy. And I think that has, you know, that plays a big part in boys not wanting to have their feelings.
I mean, 100%. You know, my son has been raised by a mom, you know, by a feminist mom who has educated him on toxic masculinity since he was really young. And, you know, and he's open.
Yeah. They'll get there. You got to go deep into the empathy.
Yeah. So interesting. What do you say to a parent who is confused about, you know, things that happen at the other house, right? And you want to give empathy, that line between not throwing the other parent under the bus, but also empathizing with their experience of their other parent.
I mean, I've had it where it's like, daddy did X, Y, and Z. And I would just say, I'm like, I'm sorry that happened. Sounds like it was hard for you guys. And just really validating their feelings. So if Esme said, oh, I'm so mad at him and blah, 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 blah. And I'd say, it seems like you're really mad. I totally understand. And just focusing on her and her feelings, and that's it. And I don't have to agree. I don't even really care what the situation is, because all I really care about is making sure she feels heard.
Right. I'll get sometimes, is that why you got divorced? And I'll be like,
no, yes. I don't know. What do I say here?
I mean, and I'm like, uh-huh. Ding, 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 ding.
But also, it's like they already got it by just asking it, right? They don't need your confirmation.
Mm-hmm. I'll sometimes say, like, I mean, that was sort of part of it for sure.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't want to gaslight, because it feels like gaslighting if I deny that his experience of his other parent is a certain way that I feel like I'm gaslighting him, right?
Yeah. And I think that's true in all situations with our kids. You know, my daughter will come home and say, you know, my friend was so mean to me. She did this and X, Y, and Z and blah, blah, blah. And I always think too, in all these situations, ones with our ex-spouses and ones with our kids and their other experiences in life, friends or teachers or whatever, it's like, we're getting our child's side of the story, right? That's all we're getting. And so we don't know what's happened on the other side. I don't know what her friend, what she did to her friend, you know, 2 days ago, or I don't know the experience she had with her teacher. Did they have a bad interaction before? And now is it playing out in a different way? Like, I can't know all this. So I don't really care to get into the details of the actual situation. That's for her as an older child to figure out. I just empathize with the feelings.
Mm. Why is that so hard for us, Michelle?
Because nobody did it for us.
Oh, right.
Yeah. We don't understand what empathy is because nobody empathized with us.
It's literally like, it's so simple.
It's so simple. And yet it feels so wrong to tell someone there it's okay to have their feelings no matter what they are,
right? Because your feelings are valid because
your feelings are valid. Just like I have a lot of clients will be like, well, I told my kid, it's not that bad that you have to go back and forth. You only go back and forth on Friday and Sunday, and Friday and Sunday is not that big a deal. And we'll buy you a toothbrush at this house, and we'll buy you a toothbrush at that house. And then you don't have to. And I'm just like thinking, okay, just stop and just say, you know what? I'm sorry. You have to go back and forth. Mommy and daddy. No, we never wanted it to be like this. We're sorry. You have to go back and forth.
I mean, sometimes I'm like watching my kid pack his stuff and he's pissed off about it. And I'm like, right now, my son takes every ounce of clothing from his closet and he brings it back and forth because it's important to him at this point to have all of his clothes. Everything. Right. And so he's fucking sick of it.
I know they really are. They get sick of
it. And like, I'm like, yeah, I get it. I wouldn't want to do that.
No, I wouldn't want to do that. But I also want you to go to your dad's house, please.
Also, I need my week off.
Yeah. So sorry, but I have you're leaving at 5. I have plans at 6. Okay, so I get it twisted here, everybody. You gotta go.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. Like, because I know a lot of women like are like, I can't be without my kids. I can't.
Oh, so sweet. I used to think that.
I never thought that.
I used to think that. And then when they left, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I can breathe again.
Well, I also have a son. My son has very severe ADHD that, you know, from like when his kindergarten teacher came to me and was like, I think we need to have him evaluated. I was like, you mean this isn't normal? And she was like, no, honey, this is not. And I was like, oh, thank God.
You're like, wait, there's a reason. Wait.
Okay. I mean, it was like, it's so intense. Parenting him has been exhausting. By the way, also the greatest pleasure and all of those things, because along with the ADHD comes some incredible gifts. And, you know, he's a fucking genius and all sorts of stuff, but that's really hard. It's hard to raise a genius.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
It's hard to raise either highly sensitive or ADHD or highly emotional, or kids who have difficult personalities are hard.
So when he would go to his dad's, I would be like, oh my God, flat for like a day with the exhaustion, because, you know, with divorce comes, you have to be 100% on 50% of the time and then you get to be 100% off. But I know there's a lot of women who are like, I can't be without my children.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's a hard adjustment. I think the first time my kids left, I cried. You know, I sat in my kitchen and I cried. My dad was there and he's like, it's going to be okay. I was like, no, it's not. They aren't just going to leave. What are they going to do when they're there? You know, and it's like, it's hard, but you adjust and you do make it through, and they're okay too. And we're all very resilient and we all do adjust to a new lifestyle. And just because this lifestyle is different doesn't mean it doesn't work, and doesn't mean it's wrong, and doesn't mean that we're all going to suffer.
Right.
It does end up working.
That's right. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think so much of that is about surrender, right? And being powerless and really kind of coming to that place of surrender that you can't control. You know, I remember the feeling when my son went to preschool and I was like, somebody else is, for the first time in his entire life, someone else is putting information into the receptacle that only I have been inputting so far.
Yes. And it's the same feeling, right? When they go to kindergarten or preschool, as letting them go with your ex-spouse.
Right. Like, I can't control what's happening.
No, but they're okay.
Yeah.
They're okay. And you can be okay too.
And what would you say to the women whose ex-spouses maybe have been abusive to them? You know, maybe like their fear is genuine, right? Like, are they going to be okay?
we hope that they're going to be okay. And we can't know 100% with anyone, you know, really, are they going to be okay driving in my friend's car? I don't know, you know, and do we take all legal precautions necessary to keep our kids safe? Yes, absolutely. And if there are those abusive things going on, we make sure we try our best to put stop gaps in the way of that as much as we can. But 100%, we can't know for sure. And there is some sort of like letting go. Yeah.
Right. It is that letting go and surrendering to the unknown, and that they have their own journey.
Yeah. And that it's likely, could that abuse have happened if you were married? Maybe.
That's right.
Probably likely if it were already happening when you were married, then it could happen again. And are you mitigating that by not being abused also, and mm-hmm. by keeping that abuse away from your children? And I know it seems scary to leave, but is the alternative staying together a better one with less violence, or is it possible that there's less violence apart?
That's right. So this sort of connective pair, the opposite of this connective parenting that you're talking about is the punitive. What else? It's you know, power over, right?
Shame.
Why is that bad for kids? Like, you know, you've got those people who are like, that's how kids learn. They'll never do it again if you slap him, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a lot of research around why it's bad. But the big things that come up, I mean, well, yelling in particular, which a lot of us do a lot of yelling, yelling changes the way in which your brain is formed. And it keeps your alert center, your amygdala, on high alert. And so if you yell a lot, or there's a lot of conflict, or there's a lot of, you know, if your kid's living in fight, flight, or freeze a lot because they're being yelled at, they're being punished, you know, they're being shamed, then their amygdala takes up a big portion of their brain and they're living in fight, flight, or freeze. And if you live in fight, flight, or freeze, you can't really think well. Because your prefrontal cortex, your reasoning center, your thinking center isn't engaged because you're living in your amygdala. So that's a huge part of a kid can't relax if they know they're going to be punished, if they know they're going to be yelled at, if they're being yelled at, if they're being punished, if they're being shamed. They cannot relax, so they can't think well, so they can't use their entire brain. So you're actually keeping them from learning, and you're keeping them from engaging in the world completely if you're using these methods. I think that's the biggest reason.
When you respond with empathy and with connectivity, you are actually increasing the building of the prefrontal cortex, or whatever, the blood supply, the neurons.
It's being used.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And, you know, the prefrontal cortex is not fully formed until we're about 25, right? And so the more energy and like neurons we can be shooting into the prefrontal cortex as we grow, the better, right?
Yeah. And there's something called pruning that goes on in teenage and adolescent years. And what happens with pruning is that the neurons that aren't really being used much get pruned. Mm-hmm. And so if your amygdala, your alert center, is being used a lot, the pruning is not going to happen there. They're going to say, preserve amygdala. It's being used. We need it. So we're going to put all of our energy and time and you know, resources into the amygdala. And I don't know, but could the prefrontal cortex get some pruning if it's not used that much? I don't know, but I don't want to risk that. I want my kid to be able to think
well. That's right. And so the amygdala, just so we're clear, is the amygdala is the you know, what we call the lizard brain, the fight, flight, freeze. It is like the trauma center of the brain. And when the amygdala is activated, the prefrontal cortex basically goes to sleep.
Yeah, disengages completely.
You can't reason, right, when you're in, you know, when there's a bear coming to attack you, you're not going to sit there and go, I wonder if I should run or if I should, right? It's the response is
adrenaline. Yeah, right.
And the prefrontal cortex, when it's online, there's it is responsible for reason, empathy, executive function. Yeah.
Judgment.
Mm-hmm. All of those things.
Yeah. Everything that's good. It's the good part. It's where we want to live, where we have but we all have a hard time living there, right? Because we can't live there all the time, right? Because we need our alert center when, Right. The bear's coming. Exactly. We need to let go of reason and just run. And we need it, but we don't want it to be, you know, overactive. And if a child is being shamed or punished or yelled at or, you know, otherwise treated unkindly, they might live too much in their amygdala. So that's why we want to get rid of it. And it doesn't make you feel good. And it doesn't make us feel good to do it to our kids. I know that. I never feel good when I yell or shame. It doesn't feel good. And 80% of what children learn is what's modeled. And so you're really teaching your kid how to shame, or you're teaching your kid how to punish, or you're teaching your kid, if you don't get what you want, honey, when you get older, you should yell at people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So look, we all lose our shit, right?
Yeah, for sure. Me too. I was a huge yeller.
Yeah. Years. You say that you're a recovering yeller.
Right here. Still recovering. Yeah.
So what happens, like even you, right? The expert on this, you lose your shit. What happens in those moments for you?
I've done a lot of identifying. For me, I get this like physiologically, like I get hot in my chest and my heart starts to really beat in my chest. I don't know if you can feel that too, but, and I see red. I almost just see red. I go immediately to, you know, fight. Yeah. And if I don't stop myself right there, I know now that's where I need to stop myself. I need to walk away. I need to like try to self-regulate. But if I don't stop myself right there, I'm on a freight train and I'm going to make you feel as bad as I need to make you feel because I'm having an adverse reaction to whatever you're doing and I'm going to make you pay. And I cannot get off that freight train. So what I've identified now is that when I feel that, I have to stop. I have to walk away. I have to find a mantra. I have to do something. But that, physiologically, that's what happens.
Interesting. I love that idea, the identification that like that you they're going to have to pay.
Oh, they will. I'll get on the train. I'm not getting on till I get to the station.
Yeah. And then so what happens, like, so you've gotten to that station and then you're like, oops.
Yeah. And then it's like total complete guilt, which I hate because then I'm out of my prefrontal cortex again and I'm living in shame and guilt and I can't think well, but I need to apologize. And I know that, and I need to get there and I need to say, I am wrong. And this is a distinction too. I think with some parents will say, I'm really sorry, but you made me upset. Or I'm really sorry, but when you do that, I get really angry.
Right. I'm really sorry. Even if it's like really like meant to be self-aware and taking responsibility, right. I'm really sorry. But when you did that, you know, I get triggered.
Right. I'm really sorry, but it's your fault, basically. So I really try to say, I am so sorry. Nobody should ever yell at you like that. That is not an acceptable behavior. And I am deeply sorry.
Period. That's it.
That's it. And I try to move forward because, you know, you can get caught in your own guilt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do your kids say to you when you say that?
They're really receptive. Yeah. It's okay, Mom. I know.
Yeah. Right. It's amazing, right? It's amazing what happens when you take responsibility with your kids. They're like, yeah. They're so relieved.
Yeah, I think they are because they're probably thinking it's all their fault, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Right. They do because that's what their brains, right? That's like a child's brain. It's all about them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything we do is because mm-hmm. of them.
Yeah. Do you have any other sort of words of wisdom or advice for women who are really sort of on the precipice of divorce or going through divorce with a parent that they have different styles of parenting?
Yeah, it's okay. It's so okay. It's more than okay, I have to say. Parenting alone for me is so much better and easier than parenting closely with a partner because I am so grounded in what I want to do and how I want to do it. And the relationship I gave up partially the relationship I share with my ex-husband. I gave that relationship up to focus on the relationship I share with my girls. I, in fact, think the relationship I share with my girls is better because I got divorced.
That is so profound. And I so wholeheartedly agree. I feel exactly the same way. I feel exactly because I was constantly functioning in reaction to his sort of domineering parenting and then being yelled at for not, you know, having his back or whatever. And when I left, I was actually able to parent, not in reaction to someone else's parenting, but actually on my own.
Yeah. And you don't realize how much time and effort and energy you're spending on your relationship with your love relationship, that it takes, especially if it's on the rocks, you're spending so much energy there that your kids are kind of like, they're not necessarily getting all of you that they could be getting if you only had to focus on them.
That's right. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this conversation. It's so important. It's just so important that we all do this differently than it's done to us, right?
Yeah. And it feels so much better when we do.
Yeah. I feel like talking to you is like it's like a warm bath.
Oh, yay. I like that. Thank you.
Where can people find you?
I'm Peace and Parenting everywhere. Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. I have my biggest following, and where I have my most interaction is Instagram. And my website is peaceandparentingla.com. And I do, private coaching and online courses and lots of free stuff. And I have my own podcast too.
Awesome. Which we will be on. We will have another conversation.
Yeah. You're coming on, girl.
I can't wait. Thank you so much. I so appreciate you sharing all of this wisdom and information with my people.
Thank you. And there's life after divorce.
There is, isn't there?
Yes.
and there sometimes is. A better one.
mostly a better one.
A better one.
Yeah. Thank you, Kate.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen in and leave me a review. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at The Divorce Survival Guide. I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, you, my love, deserve to be happy.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.